Welcome to the Unsweetened SIO podcast. My name is Siobhan Harris. I am a certified integrative nutrition health coach and the founder of unsweetenedsio.com. I gave up all sugar and all flour on January 13th, 2018, and am finally free of my addiction. My mission is to help other sugar addicts find their path to freedom and live the sweet life without sugar.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 114 of Unsweetened SIO, the podcast. Today, very happy to have Susan Miller back with us. And she is celebrating today 500 days being sugar and flour free, which is basically a year and like, you know, 4.5 months-ish. So super exciting day. I don't know. I just love the 500 days. So welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you.
And congratulations. That's amazing. What does that feel like to even be able to say today is 500 days?
Oh gosh. You know, it's on my gratitude list for every day. I keep that. I have a day counter, you know, and you're either in the camp of counting days or you're not. And I get that, but I just like that benchmark and I like to be able to show gratitude for that. So yeah, last night when I saw 499, I just kind of shook my head and thought, I mean, when you and I first started to talk, I was coming off of the mountain with a box of cookies, you know, and I just couldn't even, I mean, I was just almost in tears. Well, I probably wasn't. No, I don't cry much. I was almost in tears over just, you know, the thought of giving that up. I just could not even comprehend giving up my drug of choice.
Exactly. And now look at you. It's amazing. So
yeah,
here we are. And today I know we're really going to focus because it's the holiday trifecta, as you call it, you know, Halloween, yeah. Thanksgiving, and then, you know, the December holidays. So I'd love and to hear kind of what your strategies are. Now, I do feel like it's a little easier because this is now your second time going through the holiday season. I know I just think the whole first year in recovery is difficult because it's just a year of first, you know, it's like the first time you right. celebrate your birthday and might not have some kind of birthday cake the first year you go through. You know, all these different holidays and celebrations. And I remember for me, again, starting in January, I had almost a full year under my belt before I got to Christmas, but I was really shocked. I had some triggers come up that totally, I thought I was kind of good. And then these triggers came up of just these long ingrained habits and traditions around the holidays that really, really triggered me. And luckily, you know, I was fine, but I think it's really can be surprising for people, some of this stuff that, you know, that we've been doing for years and years and years. So I think any tips to get through that season for people is really, really helpful, but also keeping in mind, I mean, you can plan for a lot of stuff, but be prepared. There might be some things that trigger you that you're that kind of catch you, you know, by surprise. So yeah, I'll just be kind of curious to hear. I know now for me, it's gotten easier and easier every year for sure. But I'm curious of what that was like for you, first of all, last year, you know, because by that point you've been, you know, a few months since you started kind of in June and then starting to get through. I don't know if Halloween was ever a harder holiday for you. For me, having young kids, it is. And then kind of what Thanksgiving and Christmas looked like for you in that first year.
Yeah, my first official day was June the 1st because, you know, I started in March and I had some rocky times that went along with some health issues and that kind of thing. And I just felt really good about that June the 1st date. So yes, last year was my first round of holidays, completely sugar, flour, alcohol free. And, you know, I want to add that alcohol in there because for me, that was definitely a piece of the puzzle. I had become very dependent on it. It wasn't that I drank a lot. It's just that I drank champagne was my drink of choice and I drank it regularly. So, you know, that's very much associated with holidays, especially you know, at Christmas, New Year's, that kind of thing. So really, I feel like I had quite a challenge last year, and I am a very intentional person. So I made a plan before I ever got there. And you mentioned Halloween. Halloween has never been a big problem for me because candy has never been my drug of choice. I'm definitely a sugar / flour combination kind of person. You know, sugar even on its own doesn't get to me that much. And I want everybody to keep that in mind when I talk about some of the things that I did last year to help me, which I don't even think I'll do this year. But so sugar by itself, even chocolate, I'm not a chocolate person. I lean more toward, you know, the pastries, the flowery things with like cinnamon is like my kind of favorite thing. So having said that, when it was there, I definitely, you know, used it as an excuse, and I definitely got into it. And once I did get into it, it was very hard for me to get out of it. You know, when I was working in an office setting, which I was in a public school system, and I know a lot of people, even in private corporate business, can relate to this. There's a room that has all the things. And in October of each year in the administration of my school system, everybody would take a day and bring something. And I think that even happened again in December. So in that common room, there would always be, you know, all the things. And that was really hard for me. And once I started, I couldn't stop. I would go and scoop out whatever and have it sitting on my desk, and I would just graze on it all day long. And frankly, the concept of being a grazer for me is just not even a thing anymore, but it is something that I would do. And candy was definitely a part of that during October. So it's not a real big challenge for me. It wasn't then, and it's not now. But when you get into the holidays of Thanksgiving, Christmas, when all of those beautiful things come out and everybody has their special thing that you just have to taste and that kind of thing, and you're in so many social settings, it's definitely a challenge. Now, I had, and I think we've talked about this before, I had already been labeled as the weird one in all of the groups, you know, whether it was our close friends or even at church, it extended, you know, group settings. People always knew because I was in school nutrition, which people thought that was healthy. And then I became a nutritional therapy practitioner. So I just kept layering those labels on me, which now, you know, I'm working with addicts through holistic addiction medicine and through 12-step recovery programs. So, you know, I've always had those kind of labels. So it's probably been a little easier for me than it would be for some other people. But it's still, it's hard, you know, I mean, it's hard to answer the questions that people really don't want to hear the answers. You know, they still want a magic pill. They want a magic program. And it's just not there, you know, it's just hard, and you just have to, work through it and, just be true to yourself and knowing what your own truth is as far as your eating habits. I think I got a lot better when I finally accepted that I am an addict, but that doesn't mean that other people are, and that I have to do things for me that other people don't have to do. And it was really accepting that in the deepest part of my soul that made the difference. So... but you, I think, were asking about strategy. So anything before I kind of go on?
That's huge. I think just that point of, just kind of accepting. And, you know, sometimes like I really don't do that anymore, but in the beginning, especially, I used to kind of throw myself a pity party of, oh, everyone else gets to enjoy this. But really another thing I want to point out is like how much better I feel, and I'm sure you do too, like usually the holidays, by the end of the holidays, everyone's like just miserable. You know, come January, everyone's trying a diet, even people that aren't addicted, still kind of overindulge, overeat. So everyone's just feeling like they've gained weight and just kind of feel really yucky. Because it's just such a long season, you know, and that can even carry into like to Valentine's Day for some
people. Absolutely.
It certainly did for me. So, you know, I might have a little break in January where I try to be good, but then, you know, all these other things came around and then there's Easter. But I think for me, it's amazing now to feel exactly like I do pretty much every day, even at the end of the holiday season. So come January, I'm not frantically like looking for that next diet or, you know, magic pill, or I'm just like, yeah, I'm just still eating on my same program. And it's just such a relief. Like, you know, I just remember that first year that I went through it, I thought, oh my gosh, this is the first year. And I don't know how many years that my New Year's resolution isn't around losing weight or a diet. Mm-hmm. You know, now I make these really more, goals for myself that just isn't about food or eating whatsoever. And it's just so much freedom to that. And just coming out of the holidays, not feeling that like shame and guilt and just feeling of yuck, you know, like really that extreme food hangover. So yeah, I mean, I think for me, and I'm just curious if you noticed that even just last year, like, wow, this feels so much better to how I would feel, you know, in years past. After the, you know, going through the holidays.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a relief. And I have for most of my adult life just accepted that I was going to gain 5 to 8 pounds between Halloween and the new year. And then I would in my head give myself until the end of March to get that off. But what would happen is, like you just mentioned, in February, Valentine's Day would come around, and then Easter came close to that. And by the end of March, I was more discouraged than I was closer to where I wanted to be. So yes, in January of this year, I was able to focus more on inner goals than I was on outer work. Because thankfully, you know, my weight and gosh, all those conversations we had about weight back mm-hmm. in the beginning, you know, it's pretty much stable and with quite a bit of leeway. I mean, as long as I stick with real whole foods and stay away from sugar, flour, and alcohol, you know, it may fluctuate a little water-wise depending on how many carbs I eat, because I have come around the world when it comes to food plans. And at this point, you know, as long as it's real whole food, I don't worry about the carbs. I think you're kind of that way too. So on any given day, I may carry a little bit more water weight than I normally do if I've had more fruit or, you know, a more grain than I normally do. But it doesn't scare me anymore. And that, you know, I think that is my number one the thing I'm most thankful for is I'm not scared of my weight anymore.
And people that are listening and have heard your interviews throughout, and if you haven't, go back and listen, because I don't know, this is like number 8 or 9 that we're doing together. But, you know, we started talking with Susan even before she decided to give, you know, like when she was still deciding to give it up. And yeah, you were so focused on your weights. And so that is really for people listening, like, oh, you know, my other episode recently was about expect miracles. And that really to me is like a miracle on how far you've come from being so focused on that and so worried about gaining weight. When I was like, it's okay, you can eat some of these other things. And you were so resistant. And now how much more comfortable you are even by saying, oh yeah, I can eat some grains sometimes, I can eat some fruit, where before you were so regimented, I think, and really restricting things. So yeah, that is definitely a kind of freedom, you know, when you're able, because a lot of people, you know, can be really, really restrictive and not be eating sugar and flour and technically, you know, be in recovery. But if you're that restrictive, it's not freedom. You know, you're still kind of enslaved to that, you know, it doesn't feel the same as it does when you can be a little more, oh yeah, it's okay. You know I kind of fluctuate a little bit and just comfortable and not so obsessed about things. So I really think that is amazing. And I love to have seen that transformation in you. It's been really amazing.
But I do want to bring up the point, and I think that I have said this before. I really want to have sympathy. It's not empathy because I haven't really been there, but I do want to be sympathetic to those who have a lot of weight to lose.
Yeah.
Neither you nor I, you probably a little bit more than I did, but we, neither one of us had to be concerned about losing, you know, 100 pounds, that kind of thing. And I know there are people out there who the weight is a really, really big deal. So I definitely want to be sensitive to that. And for those folks, you know, it's, you got to trust the process. I mean, you know, it, that's almost as big, I think, as coming out of denial, you know, is just trusting that something is going to work. It's going to take time. It took a lot of time to put that much weight on, and it's going to take time to get it off. That's just the reality.
And I talk about that a lot for myself. Again, I don't weigh myself, so I have no idea, but I was, you know, maybe not 100 pounds, but at least 80, you know, I probably lost like 80 pounds if I'm guessing. And I was very focused on that in the beginning and frustrated that it didn't come off. I mean, it took like at least 5 months for it to start coming off. And now, you know, I've said this before in other podcast episodes, like the weight loss is just an added benefit to the, all the other things, like of just being free, especially from the mental game of, you know, just the obsession, you know. And in the beginning, though, that was definitely my focus. But now, and it sounds like for you too, a lot of us come in with that focus. But then on the other side, yeah, that's a huge benefit. And we're very grateful for it. But at the same time, there's so many other things that just seem more important, or even, that we're even more grateful for. But I totally agree that in the beginning, if I was listening to this, I'd be like, whatever. I still, only thing that matters is the weight loss, because that was my real motivation. But let's start talking about some strategies. And I will say, like, Halloween is a hard one for me because I am I love chocolate. I love candy. I was that person as a kid that ate all my Halloween candy probably within 2 days, and then ate my brother's and my sister's too. And my brother's birthday is on Halloween. So it was like the best ever, because not only would we go trick or treating, but then we'd have like cake and ice cream too. So it was like one of my favorite, you know, times of the year. And even, you know, before I gave it up, I would buy candy, you know, like people do in the store, maybe like a month before Halloween, eat it all, have to rebuy it, eat it all again. I mean, I don't know, 3 or 4 times. And now I will just say, I do not put out candy. Like, I get like either little bags of popcorn or pretzels. You know, I do not put out candy. So I don't even, it just feels, not even that I would be tempted by it anymore, because I really wouldn't at this point, maybe that first Halloween. But now it just feels like I can't do that. You know, I just can, you know, how I feel about sugar, and I just cannot then put it out for other, for other people, just like I no longer gift candy or, you know, food to people. Like I might, you know, when maybe get someone a nice box of chocolates, I just cannot do that anymore. It just doesn't feel right. So, you know, that's kind of my suggestion, I guess, for Halloween. If you are like, if you are struggling and you do really like the chocolate and the candy, just get something else. Like kids still love popcorn, you know, or those little, right. You know, that's a really good one. And they make little individual bags that you can give out. So maybe have something like that. So it's just not even in the house if you think that's going to be a big temptation. And then there's also then, what do you do with your kids' candy? You know, because when my kids were really little, I would totally eat their candy too. And what we do in my house, which I probably have talked about before, there's this great concept of the Switch Witch.
Where, yes, I love that.
Yeah, so it's a book, and there's a couple different books about it, but basically the Switch Witch comes. So my kids, and I only let them have one piece of candy, which probably sounds outrageous to most people, but they're more excited, honestly, about getting dressed up and collecting the candy than actually eating the candy. So they get very excited. They bring it all home. They pick out their one piece of candy, and then they put everything like in a bag, and we leave it out overnight. And the Switch Witch comes and either brings them like a book or a toy, and they are just like thrilled by that, you know? And then I make sure that my husband just takes the candy away. I don't, you know, because before when the Switch Witch came, I would then eat it all. But But now we just kind of get rid of it out of the house. And the kids still really, really enjoy that. So if that's something, you know, maybe that you haven't done before, it might be hard to start right away with only one piece of candy. So whatever sounds, you know, maybe let the kids pick out a few pieces of candy and then try the Switch Witch, you know, thing this year. Because again, most kids aren't like I was addicted as a kid. You know, I probably, if you had given me the choice then, said you can either eat all this candy or I'll get you any toy you want, I would probably still pick the candy. But most kids like aren't like that. They get really, even just a book, my kids are really, really excited about. So that might just be a strategy for Halloween, is, you know, maybe not having it in the house, having something like popcorn. And then as far as like with kids, trying this Switch Witch idea. So again, it's just not, it's not in the house. And then I think it also just helps your kids build some healthier habits of, you know, not have, no one really needs to eat that much candy. You know, like you can just collect like pillowcases and pillowcases full of candy. There's just no need for anyone to eat that much, you know? And I know some people put it away in a drawer and they have it all year round, but still, I just think it's such, you know, it's just too much. So that would just be a strategy for Halloween. But yeah, let's talk about,
well, let me give another suggestion with Halloween. I don't know. Some of you may have seen, like in your dentist office, the dentist will have like a cardboard trunk that has little toys in it. And they actually have those on Amazon. You can order those, even the cardboard trunk. So, you know, that's something that you could do, is to set that up on a table outside and let kids pick something out of that trunk. And I mean, it's really inexpensive, and it's just little erasers and, you know, just trinket things, you know. And even at home, if you have kids, that's something you could do, is to have one. You could make your own trunk or order one, and just, there's a company called World Sales, and you can order that online, and they have all of those kinds of things, that just little trinkets, and you could let your kids pick maybe once a day out of the trunk, or put it in a pumpkin, you know. So that's something you could do to keep the candy out of the house.
Oh, I love that idea. Yeah, because kids love those little toys. Yeah, those little toys.
And again, then they forget them 15 minutes after they pull it out, but they get to do it again the next day. So
that's a great idea.
That's an idea. The other thing that I do, that I certainly did last year, my husband really likes candy. You know, he'll eat it in his chair at night when he's watching TV. So I always have it in the house. But again, keep in mind, it's not my thing. But I definitely have it put away in a certain, he has actually a cabinet in the kitchen that I don't have to go in for anything. It's got things like his bars, you know, because he still does kind bars. It has his candy. It has chips that I don't eat, you know, Doritos, those kind of things. So that's all in a cabinet that I just pretend like it's not even there. Like it's not even a part of my kitchen. So that has really helped. Now I haven't had kids since I have gone off of sugar, but I've certainly been in the school system where there was a lot of it. So, you know, one of the things that I did do on the years that I was trying to, like you said, be good, is I did avoid, just not go in the room where they kept those things. So yes, making mental compartments of where things are, I think that would be a second strategy, but it's just going to be hard because of the culture that we live in. It's everywhere. You can't even check out at the hardware store without being assaulted by candy. So if that is your thing, I definitely have sympathy for those folks. And
I think out of sight, out of mind does help, you know, because there are, you know, people listening are like, yeah, there's no way I can have it completely out of the house. I like the idea of having a separate cabinet where those foods are that you don't have to go into. And definitely in that corporate environment too. I've also been in that and worked in the school system too. And there was always junk, and same thing. It was just, I just didn't go in there. I just didn't look at it. Again, with that, no, I just don't do that anymore. So it's that discipline at first of just changing that habit, like where you might go through and grab a handful of something. It's like, no, I just don't do that anymore. I just don't. And I'm curious, I'm hoping with, you know, some people working from home more with COVID and that kind of thing. And even I am thrilled this year in school, no food is allowed, like for birthday parties, for holiday parties, no food. And a lot of it is because of COVID. And I could not be more grateful. So that is something where, you know, you're no longer having the big M&Ms was one of my peanut M&Ms was one of my foods, and no longer having a big bowl of peanut M&Ms out where everyone's taking a scoop. You know, we just think, oh, we're not doing that anymore. So I do wonder if it's a little easier since people are just a little more cautious about sharing food and stuff right now. But yeah, if you can just avoid the room, it does get easier. It's just kind of overriding those old habits of, oh yeah, I used to go by and, you know, pick a treat out of, you know, every day. But just kind of rewiring, or maybe again, having some treats that you do like. I would say that's another strategy just in general.
I was going to get there too.
Yeah.
But you know, another reality on the subject of avoidance is that at least for the first year, I just think in a way we have to, for a time, and it may be a year, it may be less, you have to put your recovery first. You have to put yourself first. And it may be that you have to not attend an event. It may be a special event. You may have to let the grandparents take your kids to trick or treat this year, you know, but in the great scheme of things, you know, it's definitely worth it. And I do think that there were things that in my first year, which would have been last year, that I didn't go to. I think I didn't even go to a church event or even family things. I think I may have avoided, and of course, COVID certainly helped with that. But it may be that for a time, you have to put yourself first. It's not going to last forever. It's going to get easier, but it's going to be really hard the first time.
And that's really a good point. Yeah, just skip it. I'm sure I did that too. I think with like holiday parties and stuff, because mine was before COVID. And yeah, you just, it's not going to, you know, kill you to skip 1 year of this. It's not forever. Like you said, it's just a temporary, and it is really important to put your recovery first. I heard a quote the other day that your recovery has to be as strong as your addiction. And I love that. And it does, you know, so you really do have to put that first. And it's okay, like you said, to have make some arrangements if it's just going to be too hard for you to be there, especially like that first year of going through all those things. So yeah, I like that kind of avoidance if you can. But moving into the next one, then, if you can't avoid, kind of like we were both just mentioning, is bringing something that you can eat, being prepared that way so that you don't feel deprived and left out. So talk about kind of what you did around that.
Well, one of my suggestions is that you don't just make it something that you can eat, but something that you really like to eat, mm-hmm. that you don't necessarily even eat on a daily basis. For me, last year, I included some dried fruit that I don't really even do that anymore. And of course, this depends on how susceptible a person is to sugar and to addiction. But for me, I was able to what I would do is mix like raisins with nuts and seeds or dried cherries. There's a company that makes, and I use this at Thanksgiving and I still have some in my freezer. They're like pumpkin spice, date balls. And really what it is just, mashed up dates. And then they roll it in cinnamon, and nuts. So it had no sugar at all. And you can get them with or without nuts. Some of them have coconut on them. There's a chocolate one that has coconut on it. For me, that wasn't too sweet. For some people, it would be. I reserve some fruits, especially for this kind of thing, because for me, things like bananas can be too sweet. Pineapple is certainly very sweet. So some of those fruits that I don't have on a regular basis, I would allow myself during the holidays. And it's kind of like that concept of, you know, how McDonald's just brings certain things out during the year, you know, puts them on their menu. It's that way for me. It's not that I can't have it all throughout the year. It's just that if I save those things for a special occasion, it does feel like I'm giving myself a treat.
Yeah, I like that. So yeah, bringing something not only that you can eat, but does feel like a treat, or at least really satisfying, you know, like that is, you know, going to feel like, you know, oh, I'm still enjoying this. You know, it's something that feels really, really good. And then also what I found is, because a lot of times I'll bring stuff and then I love when people are like, oh my gosh, this is so good. Because again, a lot of times we are labeled to kind of be those weird people. You know, I feel like I'm the same way when I show up. But that's why I do always try to bring something that people then really enjoy. And then I enjoy it too. And another thing I would do if I knew, like if it was a situation for some reason that I couldn't bring something, or I would just make sure that I ate beforehand too. Like for me, a trigger is don't ever show up hungry. You know, if I get too hungry, that can be a trigger for me. So just realizing that, I always made sure that I would have something before going to something, because if I get too hungry and wait too long, then that can be a trigger for me not to be able to stop eating. So I would think that that would be another one. And again, this kind of looks different for everybody, like you're saying.
Because for me, it was an after thing. Because I'm not a volume eater. I'm not somebody that gets hungry. You know, I don't ever have like overwhelming hunger, but I have FOMO, fear of missing out, and I have cravings. Of course, not so much anymore, but for me, it was more important to have something for after. I would make something very special for myself to have when I got home. And a lot of times I would eat it in the bathtub with candles and, you know,
that's so decadent.
I would put my, my drink in, a goblet, you know, and just relax and just be thankful that I had made it through the event and that I had something just for me. Now I don't have to do that anymore. So, but you taught me that there were things that I would do in the beginning that I might not always do. And so that's how I ended up bringing the chips back and what was sweet potatoes maybe that I didn't. I mean, there were a lot of things that I just had off limits that served me well for a period of time, but now I don't so much need them anymore.
Yeah, I love that. So again, I think as we're talking about this, I'm glad we're both talking strategies, since no one's recovery looks the same and we're all so different. So yeah, it might be that you need to eat something before, or it might be that you need to eat something after. I love that. And what else? What other strategies would you
say? Yeah, because I was always in danger of like a rebound slip or even relapse. You know, I could get through a big event, but then after it was over, it was like, I made it, you know, that's great. But then a few hours later, I'm rationalizing. I'm going, wow, look how good you did. You know, you deserve, you know, a little something to reward yourself, you know, that kind of thing. So that was always my issue, is that I would do great sometimes, even through the whole holiday season. But then a week and a half, 2 weeks after we go on those New Year's resolutions, it's like, you know, I did so great. I'll be fine. For me, I had to accept that I could no longer moderate. So, you know, I would try to convince myself mid-January that I could probably moderate. Well, I can't. And I can't forever. You know, that's one of my things that I never, because that's not to me, that's not a part of recovery. That's a part of the way my brain is wired and my biology. Now, I will trust Vera Tarman and Benton Johnson and some of the other addiction experts that possibly in 7 years, I may be much more recovered than I think I will ever be. But it takes so very long for an addict's brain to be rewired. And I'm still I'm not real confident of that, because I know that there are people who have not smoked for 25 years, who haven't taken a drink, who haven't done a line of cocaine for 25 or 30 years, and they slip. Even that, I've seen it in my recovery rooms, and it is heartbreaking when that happens. So I don't know that 7 years is even going to do it. But for now, I just have to understand that my brain is special. It is different. It's not that I'm a bad person. It's not that I don't have enough willpower. It's just that my brain is wired differently.
It's wired differently. And that's kind of the addicted brain thinking too, after the holidays of, oh, I did so well, I could just moderate those things. Yeah, that's your brain sneaking back in any chance it can to, because it wants, you know, that's the addiction, wanting to get that hit. So yeah, just being really cautious of that, that, yeah, I don't feel that. See, that's the thing. I always think about the 7 years too. I'm going to be 4 years in and I'm like, man, my brain is still healing. You know, I still have a long way to go. And I agree with you. And some people, again, we're all so different, but I will just never take another bite. It's just not worth it for the even possibility of a slip. And I'm telling you, like, it's so much easier for me to abstain completely than it ever was to moderate. And it's so much easier for me to eat this way, by just eliminating sugar and flour. I mean, I don't count anything. I mean, the other diets, it doesn't feel like a diet, basically. Other diets that I've done were so restrictive. It was just so hard. But this honestly feels like the easiest. It's just like a lifestyle. This is just who I am now, how I eat. And it's so easy and so much easier than I thought it was going to be. Once I kind of got through that beginning part. So, and a lot of it is these habits, you know?
Yes, habits. I mean, another habit is another strategy is I use your mantra. I don't do that anymore. I just don't.
Yeah.
You know, and it may be different for somebody else, but what works for them. But yes, I mean, it is the concept of automaticity, you know, so that you just don't even think about it anymore. It's just an ingrained habit, like brushing your teeth, that, you know, you have certain things that you just don't do. And then you have other things that you do that keeps you in your recovery.
Yeah. And try to build new traditions and replace those maybe food traditions. So like, for instance, one of the things that really triggered me was my mom. And again, she made Christmas cookies with the kids. They went to her house. I wasn't going to do, like we said, like, you know, I outsourced that. And it makes me a little sad, but I do other baking things with the kids, you know, but I don't need to make cookies with them. And that's something my mom really enjoys. But she made these like peanut butter Hershey Kiss cookies, which is like my favorite thing ever. And all she did that first year was just send me a picture of the kids making them. And it sent me like, it was like a 4-day thing of, oh my, I really like had this need to have them. And it brought back all these memories. And you know, and I got through that, it passed and it was fine. But it's just, yeah, I don't do that anymore. I just don't. So yeah, that might not be my tradition now, but I'm trying to do other non-food type traditions, especially with the kids, and really kind of focusing on that. And that too gets easier once your brain starts healing, because I'm just not obsessed with it anymore. You know, before I could care less about, say, a holiday gathering. If we were doing like a work holiday party, I could care less about talking to people and the company. It was always all about the food for me. But now it really isn't. It's about the company and the people. And that's really what the holidays should be about anyway, is spending time with our loved ones. And I really, you know, hadn't done that in years, because it was more for me about the food. So yeah, again,
reminds me of another strategy. Hmm. When I go to an event, I try to talk to 3 people I don't know.
Oh, I like that.
And that really keeps my brain occupied. And if it's a place where I know all of the people, you know, we naturally gravitate to certain people, even if we're with a friends group. And I try to make an effort to talk to 3 people that I don't usually have conversation with. And that takes up a lot of time. 3 people does. So that's one thing. And before we left the subject of food, I wanted to make sure that we talked about drinks, because that can really be an issue, even if you are not into the alcohol. I know in the South, sweet tea is a big thing. So it's real easy to accidentally take a sip of something, or to, you know, for somebody to say, oh, this doesn't have any sugar in it. It's now, I'm really big about just sweetness. I don't just do no sugar. I don't do sweetness if it's not fruit. Okay. So that means I don't do anything that, I don't do diet drinks. I don't do, drinks that are sweetened with stevia or any of those.
No artificial sweeteners, no natural sweeteners, no sweeteners. Yeah.
Right. Because it is sweet that triggers. So I have learned that when I go to a restaurant, especially with a group of people, I always get the carbonated water, like seltzer water with lime, and it bubbles, it fizzes. I don't keep it at home. That's only something that I do in a restaurant, and it makes it feel like I'm having something special. So I always do that in restaurants. And then at home, I have a really high quality, and I say for it to taste good, it really does need to be high quality. I have a coconut water. What I have is, I think it's called Good Harvest, and it's very expensive. It's as expensive as buying a bottle of wine. And that's the way I drink it. Mm. I drink it like somebody would liquor, two fingers, or a 4 ounce or 5 ounce pour of wine. And that is my special drink at home, because typically all I drink, I have a little bit of coffee in the morning, but all I drink is water, period, because I try to drink half my body weight in water, and boy, that sometimes that's a lot. So yeah, I try to have something that feels a little special as far as beverage goes. You know, I would go so far, even like if I were going to have a gathering at my house, I would even do skewers of like pineapple and cherries and, you know, grapes, fruit like that, and stick it in, not just my glass. Anybody else could have it too.
Yeah.
Just put it in my glass just so that it felt a little bit decadent. And if push came to shove, I would, I'd eat the fruit too. But, you know, yeah. Beverages, they can be definitely something that trips people up.
No, that's such a good point. And I like, you know, I talked, you know, before about my elixir that I would do at night, because a lot of people like to unwind with a glass of wine or something at night. And so I would just make some kind of, for me, I'm not really a hot tea person. So I would make some kind of special, like you said, that I wouldn't have every day, buy some kind of like caffeine free tea that was really good, and ice it, and then have that. But for me too, it had to be in like you're saying, like a goblet or some kind of special cup, like, you know, could even put it in a martini glass or something, that it felt like, again, it's just that feeling of decadence. And then that mindset of, ooh, this is so relaxing. This is a treat, you know, just kind of sipping on it too. Like you would, like you're saying, like it was a glass of wine. Like I'd almost pretend it was like a cocktail, you know, and just get the same kind of mental benefits of pretending that. But yeah, I do think that's really, really a good point. And spa water, like what you're saying, is another thing that I'll do if I'm posting. I usually kind of have a big pitcher of water with like lemon and lime in it, or lemon and cucumber, or some kind of like, because then that also feels a lot, you know, like you're saying, more decadent than just plain water. I don't like the seltzer water, but I know a lot of people that do that with a lime, which is a great idea. And also if you're at like a holiday party, that almost looks like you're carrying around a mixed drink. So if you feel like you don't want to kind of fit in, those are some
strategies. It keeps the questions down.
Yes. Yeah. Like just pretend, like no one knows, you know, what's, you know, you can just kind of pretend. So those are some kind of really good strategies. What else? I'm just thinking, we're kind of running out of time. Is there any other strategies that you have?
Well, I would definitely have an elevator speech of 2 minutes or less for those people that corner you and try to challenge you on what you're doing, or for those people that this is just one more thing, you know, because you've done so many different things for so many years, you know, even if it's just, you know, to say, I know I've done everything under the sun, but this is just something that I have decided is good for my inner self. You know, it just makes, it's just good for me. You know, you have to have something that you can get out of a conversation quickly when people, because a lot of times they're cornering you because they feel guilty for what they're doing, and they want a magic solution. You don't have a magic solution. What you're doing is so much bigger than what most people are willing to do. And I think that's something that, you know, we're definitely in a, it's a special little club. It's small. There's not too many people that are willing to go sugar, flour, even alcohol free. I mean, that just, they look at you like you're from another planet. And you really are. I mean, we are just a very small group in comparison to everybody out there. And so you really have to cut those conversations off pretty quickly, because they don't really, most people don't really want to do what you're doing. They just want the results.
And they kind of get triggered. I have found that too. And even when I explain, not everyone needs to do this. This is just what works for me. But I think you're right. People, has nothing to do with you. It's just triggering something within the, you know, people themselves. And then they're kind of rethinking, oh, should I be? So yeah, I kind of just remind myself of that. And I'm very clear when I tell people, this is just really what has worked for me. But I know that most people don't have to do this, you know, and I always will say to you, just like an alcoholic needs to give up alcohol. You know, some people can have it in moderation. I'm just not one of those people. I really wish I was. You're lucky you are. You know, I'll say that to people a lot. They're like, oh, I don't understand. Can't you just have like two bites? And I'm like, I've never been able to have just two bites. That would be amazing, but I've never been able to do that. So yeah, I think that's a good idea, having a little elevator speech. Or what I used to do with people that were like, you know, that you don't want to go into the whole thing with, that are more just strangers, like people would offer and I'd be like, oh, you know, say like for a dessert, oh, I'm just not hungry right now. Could I take some of that home? And that just kind of cut it off too.
Yeah.
And people usually would forget to even follow up and give me a piece to take home. Or if they did, I would just like throw it in the first like trash can that I could. Cause again, then it's just like, yeah, I'm just not hungry right now. And again, that would just shut down any people's questions. So I would do that too. Now I'm more, yeah, I just don't eat that. But in the beginning, I was really more cautious of hurting people's feelings. I think that's another thing that comes into this, especially with our family. You know, those relationships are just so, you know, complicated with these family traditions and what you're not going to eat, grandma's famous, blah, blah, blah. Or, you know, I cook this all day for you and all that stuff. Yeah. So there's a lot of guilt around that too. So sometimes it's just, oh, could I take some home? I'd love to enjoy that later. And then you just don't have to, you know, but it does get easier and easier, especially with those really close loved ones, of them more accepting, you know, I'm still kind of unique in my family and I don't think everyone understands, but they're more accepting of it now. They've stopped asking me, you know, but it's taken, you know, a few years to get there, and they might not understand it for them, but they see that it works for me. And that's the other thing. They see how much more energetic I am, how different I look, how happy I am. And so they really have kind of stopped questioning it. So.
And speaking of relationships, it's really important to have a sense of community with other people who are doing what you're doing. And there are a lot of us out there. You know, there are many, many groups that you can find on social media. And if social media is something that triggers you, and it very well can, because I told you a lot of times I would be triggered by just people just continually talking about not being successful, you know, whether it was on a Facebook group or whatever. But one thing that I learned to do is I found some folks on YouTube that are doing what I'm doing or something very similar. And I put those videos in my watch later list. And so when I would get back from an event, I would watch a video or listen to a podcast to just give me that inner strength I needed to keep going. And I find that really does work. I mean, just to connect with somebody that feels what you feel and has been where you've been. That's really helpful to me.
That's a great idea. And there are more, I think, more and more podcasts out there, not just mine, but you know, the Food Junkies podcast is out there now too. And like you said, you can just re-listen to these over and over. There are plenty of, you know, I'm very limited on social media because that can be addictive for me. So yeah, there are lots of Facebook groups out there if that's something that works for you. But there's also a lot of Zoom groups and stuff too. So that's something if you are looking for some support, feel free to reach out and email me, because I could direct you to some different places. There are a lot, you know, like we said, we're a smaller group within the whole population, but there is, especially right now, I feel like is the time that there are so many more people talking about it and so many more groups and support out there than ever before. The community is definitely growing in this movement. So don't feel like you're alone and have to like, you know, do this alone through the holidays, or you're the only person, you know, doing this through the holidays, because really there are a lot of us out there. So yeah.
But I would also say though, don't let the idea of taking the time to do a full group meeting or to even join a group. Don't let that keep you from getting online and finding some support. I mean, some of the most helpful videos that I use are very short, you know, because I don't have a lot of time. I don't have the time for a Zoom meeting. And so I'll have, you know, 10 minute or less videos in my watch list, even if it's the same ones I've seen before, just so I can get a really quick shot in the arm. Because sometimes if I think about listening to something 30 minutes long or going to a meeting, that's too much for me and I don't do it. And then before I know it, I haven't encouraged myself and I'm in trouble. So I try to keep short things that will be a boost. Yeah.
I like that idea of the YouTube videos. Yeah, just have a couple things on, or even it's just a part of a podcast, just something. Right. Yeah, you don't have to. Yeah. But if you feel like you need more support and have the time, know that there's other options out there.
Lots of options. Yeah.
Is there anything else? Because we do are kind of at the end of the time. I feel like we could just keep talking about this. Is there any other last strategies maybe that you want to mention or anything else, just advice for kind of getting through the holidays that you have for listeners?
Well, it's not so much of a strategy, and I don't want to end on a down kind of note, but I do have to say that in the beginning and that first holiday season, it's just going to be hard. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to have to accept that it's not going to feel good. If it doesn't feel bad, it's certainly going to feel uncomfortable in a lot of the situations that you're in. And, you know, being in a 12-step group has really helped me. And that's not the thing for a lot of people. I understand that. But you do have to have a support system, even if it's not your family and your close friends, even if it's online, because it's not going to feel good. It's going to be really, really easy to rationalize away from it and say, I'll start in January, you know. You have to battle that, and there's no way, you just have to get through it. But I can promise people, and I've seen it so many times with people that you have interviewed, with all the other groups that I'm in, if you can just get through, it's not 30 days, it may not even be 90 days, but if you can just string enough days together, one day the light is going to come on. And you're going to feel more confident and you're going to feel better about yourself than you ever have. You're going to have self-confidence that you didn't even know was inside you. But for a while, it's not going to feel good.
And I agree with that. Yes, totally. And just accepting that too, but also then having the hope of it will get better from hearing from so many other people that it will get better, but just kind of accepting, it's going to be hard, especially through all these firsts, but then it does get better. And I'm someone now, again, going into like my fourth holiday season, and I'm not even sweating it at this point, you know, so it does get easier, and it's worth it. Like you said, just string those days together. That's a really good message, I think, to end with. So thank you so much for sharing with us today.
I missed one other thing. I make myself a special little bag. I was telling my husband about this last night. I didn't realize that I did it, but I keep a special little bag just for me in my car. It's like my emergency bag. I keep that in an emergency meal, a meal that doesn't have to, I mean, there's canned things that I normally don't even eat at home, but I keep things in my car for emergencies. And my bag is special to me. Only I know where it is. And it has things that, you know, that I really, really like. And I give myself the leeway, especially during the holidays. If I have to grab something out of that bag, I do it. Yeah. So having little secrets with yourself, that I think would be a good strategy for the holidays, you know, to just have special things that are just for you so that when you do it, you can feel good about yourself and you can feel like you have treated yourself too.
Yeah. Yes. Without compromising your recovery, like these treats, you know, something. Yeah. So I love that.
Yes.
Well, thank you again so much. And we'll have to check in with you after the holiday season to hear how the second round, I think that'd be really interesting to compare then from last year, how it feels at the end, you know, going through in next winter and talking about what it was like going through a second time.
Yeah. And getting ready for the holidays to come, because like we talked about, Valentine's Day and Easter, they're dangerous.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much. We'll talk to you again soon.
Oh, it's been fun. Thanks.
Thank you so much for listening. Have a great day. And remember, life is so much sweeter without sugar.